Hi there, welcome to Living Planet. Today we take a deep dive into mining in Brazil. The Latin American country is the second largest exporter of iron ore in the world. The resource makes up a substantial part of the country's income. But since several devastating dam breaks have spread toxic mining sludge over huge areas, resistance to new mines has been increasing. However, there are still new mining projects popping up.
That's part of a new strategy. Instead of this big project, these new small mines in the same area, all the legal process that you have to follow are more simpler, are more faster, and you don't have to get that much of license and all these legal documents.
Tony Neumann went to investigate in the Minas Gerais region in Brazil's southeast. Neil King has the story.
Gusts of wind carry the noise of excavators down from a flattened, bare, reddish-brown mountain that rises out of the jungle some 3 kilometers away. The mountain top has become a gigantic mine that is slowly being excavated, terrace by terrace. Trucks pass by every minute, loaded with iron ore. In a few years, the mountain will be gone. We're in a forest in the Minas Gerais federal state in southeastern Brazil. These woods are outside the small town of André de Mato Dentro. On the right, a fence marks the border to the Gandarela National Park. On the left, a fence marks the territory of the Lopez iron ore mine. By Brazilian standards, it is a comparatively small mine. It is located on the edge of a mountain range that Brazilian conservationists have been fighting to preserve for almost 20 years. At the forefront, Maria Teresa Corucho, a small, determined woman of 60, who everyone here calls Teca.
This mountain, Gandarela Mountain, is the only one intact in iron quadrangle. This iron quadrangle were living more than 4 million people. In this area are Belo Horizonte, the capital, from Minas Gerais. And in this mountain, there are the biggest the underground aquifer intact. The other mountains in that area are already with a lot of iron mines from a valley. And this biggest aquifer is really very important to have an alternative to give water to the capital, Belo Horizonte, with 3 million inhabitants, and also important to give water to the population around this mountain.
Belo Horizonte is located some 40 kilometers from the Gandarela Mountains. Brazil is the second largest iron producer in the world, explains Clemens Laszewski, a geography professor at the Federal University of Minas Gerais. And production is growing. Its share of gross domestic product doubled between 2018 and 2021. Ore, iron and steel now account for 20% of Brazil's export earnings. There is broad political support for mining in Brazil, like everywhere across Latin America, says Laszewski. In 1941, during the Second World War, President Getúlio Vargas declared the interests of the mining industry to be public interests, and nothing has changed to this day, not even under President Luiz Inácio Lula, who is considered a socialist.
Governments in Latin America, from the extreme right to the extreme left, are in favor of mining and agribusiness. There is a cross-party, cross-ideological consensus for this kind of economic development. Lula is no different. Lula has a policy that somehow tries to make everyone happy. He always says, Brazil is so big that you can serve big agribusiness and mining as well as the poor farmers at the same time.
Portuguese conquerors were already mining iron and gold in Minas Gerais 500 years ago. To this day, Minas Gerais produces 70% of Brazil's iron, and the focal point is the so-called Iron Quadrangle, an area of mineral-rich mountain ranges near Belo Horizonte, comprising 7,000 square kilometers. The only large mountain range here, still untouched by mining, used to be the Serra do Gandarella mountain range, in the north of the Iron Quadrangle. Then, in the early 2000s, Vale, Brazil's largest mining company, applied for a license to mine iron ore in these mountains. They want to excavate almost 40 million tons per annum for a period of 30 years. This threat to a unique ecosystem was immediately met with vehement protest, says Teca. She explains that the Gandarella Mountains are a paradise with numerous waterfalls and bubbling streams. There are howler monkeys, pumas, jaguars, anteaters, endangered long-tailed cats, and countless endemic plants. And over 100 natural caves in the Gandarella Mountains are still unexplored. A dream location for researchers and paleontologists.
We asked for the creation of the national park in 2009. At that time, Vale, in the government of Minas Gerais, in the meetings, Vale asked to change the purpose of the limits without having inside the area. Vale wants to have the Project Apollo. Then happened in 2014, when the national park was created, the limits really didn't put inside the area that Vale wants to mining. That's why we stay fighting against.
The Apollo project would destroy the so-called Kanga soils of the Gandarella Mountains, explains Teca's fellow campaigner Raul Brandao Sampaio. The Kanga rock, consisting mainly of quartz and iron oxide, covers the Gandarella peaks in layers that are up to 40 meters thick. It provides for unique ecosystems on the mountains. Yet the Kanga rock is of no interest to the mining industry. They chip it off to get to the ore below.
The soil is like a sponge. Very hard, but with a lot of small holes. And when the rain comes, and here it rains a lot, it infiltrates, not because of the vegetation, but mainly because of this kind of rock, this kind of soil. And it infiltrates on the mountain and it goes down and it forms the rivers and the subsoil water. And most of the water that we have here goes to Belo Horizonte. And if you take off the soil to extract the iron, it's not going to infiltrate anymore.
That's a huge concern, because the water also feeds the Rio das Velas river that flows towards Belo Horizonte. The town's 3 million inhabitants obtain two-thirds of their water from the river. In total, the Gandarella Mountains store 40% of the remaining groundwater resources in the Iron Quadrangle, 1.6 billion cubic meters. Without the Kanga layer on the mountains, the rainwater would just run off, without being stored. Flooding would increase, and the groundwater reservoirs would shrink. And what's more, this would threaten a unique natural habitat. A unique flora has developed under the extreme conditions of this highly metallic Kanga rock. Because of the high iron concentration, the metallic crust can store much more heat than other soil or stone. And temperatures can be up to 60 degrees colder at night than during the day. The plants that grow here are special. From cacti and medicinal plants to special so-called metallophile species that have evolved to grow on metallic soils. The movement to protect the Gandarella Mountains has repeatedly organized demonstrations and vigils in recent years. With the help of scientists, it has raised awareness and managed to prevent Vale's Apollo project to this day. The company is now resorting to salami tactics, says Raul Brandao Sampaio with a bitter smile. He explains that there are several new mini-mines in the area and points once again to the Lopez mine and a dump truck that kicks up a whirl of red dust as it drives by.
That's part of a new strategy from Vale to keep extracting iron. Instead of this big project, these new small mines in the same area, you have companies with another name, the name Vale doesn't appear, and with these smaller projects, you can get a mining starting really faster than with a big project. Since it's a smaller project, all the legal process that you have to follow are more simpler, are more faster, and you don't have to get that much of license and all these legal documents. And also, it's harder for the people that make some kind of resistance to react against it.
That is despite the fact that it is much easier these days to mobilize protests. Because around here, a number of deadly tailings dam disasters have changed many people's views on mining. Tailings dams are the embankment dams where the byproducts of mining are stored. The mining sludge is often liquid and needs to dry out to make the embankment solid, and it is highly toxic. In Brumagino, very close to the Ganderella Mountains, almost 300 people died in January 2019 in the worst ever tailings dam disaster. When the dam collapsed, it released a mud flow that engulfed the mine's headquarters, as well as houses, farms and roads downstream. And it was not the weather or fate that was responsible, but greed for profit in the Vale Group, says Konstantin Bittner. He is a mining expert who works for the German Catholic aid organization Miserior.
Tailings dams are mainly built as so-called upstream dams. This means that the mine sludge is stored in a valley behind the initial dam. And as more and more sludge gets added, the dam is then raised again and again. So when the first structure is full at some point, the next structure is built on top so that even more mine sludge can be stored behind it. This form of tailings dam is the cheapest and the most dangerous. And because it is the cheapest, it is also the most attractive for the mining companies. Here in Brazil, this type of dam was banned after the Brumadinho dam burst in
2019.
The Brumagino disaster released 12 million cubic meters of toxic iron ore waste across several hundred square kilometers. This gooey sludge is still covering what used to be fertile land close to several local rivers, with dire consequences for thousands of farmers. Professor Clemens Laschewski explains.
This land can no longer be used for farming. The soil is so hard that the machines break when you drive a tractor over it or if you try to plow. Rainwater cannot penetrate the soil, and when you plow it, the water stays 30 centimeters below the surface and the roots die, which leads to the impoverishment of the farmers.
Und das führt zur Verarmung der Bauern.
Over the next few years, the mining company Vale will have to dismantle more than 100 dams in the Minas Gerais region. The company needs to drain millions of cubic meters of contaminated water and collect it again. It has to dry and safely store millions of tons of mining residues. And Vale wants to use this opportunity to extract a lot more iron ore from the material. This is a highly complex job, which makes sense from an ecological perspective. But it requires a great deal of caution, because otherwise it could endanger the villages below the dams. In short, these villages and their inhabitants are in the way of the company, especially since additional gold and iron ore is stored underground. The solution is eviction, says activist Teka. She takes us to a gravel road above the village of Socorro. Elida Geralda is waiting by the road. She is a young veterinarian who has spent most of her life in the village below. We look across the white, turquoise and pink houses and stables covered with red, brown clay tiles. The village now lies silent, partly overgrown by the jungle. Elida points to a 6-meter-high steel post, fitted with a surveillance camera, right next to us. 200 meters away, with its headlights flashing, is a pickup truck. Vale's security team is watching us. The young woman looks down into the valley.
You can see my cousin's house down there. She used to live in my street and ran a beekeeping business. Do you see the small grey building on the right? That's where she kept her honeybees.
Until that fateful day, the 8th of February,
2019.
It happened exactly 15 days after the Brumadinho Dam accident. We all still had the terrible images before our eyes when the sirens went off in the village in the middle of the night. At first, my sister thought it was a false alarm, but the sirens continued to wail. My aunt came to us all worked up, and several of our neighbors panicked because nobody knew what was going on.
Foi pânico, porque a gente não sabia o que estava acontecendo realmente.
500 frightened people running for their lives, some still in their pajamas, without documents, without clothes, without anything. Surprisingly, in the town of Barunje Cocais, everything was strangely prepared for them, says Elida. Hotel rooms had been reserved, and because there weren't enough, rooms had also been reserved in neighbouring towns. However, some older people who were paralysed by the shock stayed behind in the village.
My father, like some others, didn't want to leave no matter what. He said he would rather die than abandon his many animals. So he actually stayed in the village. The following afternoon, I had to go and fetch him, accompanied by the police. My mother would have gone completely mad in the city without him.
What had happened? The Vale Company, owner of the tailings dam above Socorro village, had suddenly declared the highest emergency level for the dam. Immediate danger of bursting. Socorro was to be evacuated immediately, in the middle of the night. The dam never actually broke, but since February 8, 2019, no one has been allowed to enter Socorro. Elida says that people's furniture, cars, windows and doors have been stolen without Vale's security intervening. But villagers who visited their own homes have been reported to the authorities, she says. The company still pays some of the displaced people a minimal living. It is said that the inhabitants of Socorro will not be allowed to return home until the 2030s at the earliest. In the meantime, Vale has bought up most of the village. The former population has scattered to the four winds. Only a few, like Elida's cousin Sileni, the beekeeper, refuse to sell. Tears well up in the young woman's eyes as she talks about her family. Her father and siblings have moved to distant towns because that was the only place they could find work. Elida herself is looking after a great aunt with dementia and her mother, who is suffering from depression. The author tried to include the position of the mining company in this report. However, Vale did not respond to any questions despite repeated requests. We've travelled 6 hours north, to the Alto Chequi-Chainonia region. The agricultural school of the Centre for Alternative Agriculture, or CAV for short, is surrounded by fruit trees. The small civil society organisation cares for victims of an industry closely linked to iron ore mining, the eucalyptus industry. It started in the 1970s, when Brazil's military government decided to become less dependent on coal imports to get energy for the smelting of iron ore and extraction of iron, explains CAV director Renato Alves de Souza. The government decided to process iron with energy from charcoal, obtained from fast-growing eucalyptus. The eucalyptus plantations in Alto Chequi-Chainonia were turned into so-called chapadas, plateaus that had previously been used by farmers living on the slopes.
The chapadas used to be common land, without fences. Small elevations, watersheds, separated the areas used by individual communities. Lots of cattle grazed up there back then. People gathered wild fruits, such as pequi, mangala, and yatoba. They caught fish in the veredas, small ponds, and the medicinal plants of the chapadas were their natural pharmacy. The people here make syrup from many of the wild plants found in the cerrado, which they use to treat all kinds of illnesses.
The military government expelled the farming families from the chapadas, cleared the wet savanna there, and set up eucalyptus plantations, an agriculturally demanding undertaking that required a lot of fertilizer and pesticides.
The chapada soils are quite acidic and contain aluminum. That's why the vegetation is sparse, the trees are small and stunted. In order for eucalyptus trees to grow on this soil, the plantation owners lime the soil, and the eucalyptus plant penetrates the soil very deeply with its roots, far deeper than any other plant. It draws vast quantities of water from the soil, which drains it from springs and streams.
Today, Brazil plants eucalyptus on almost 6 million hectares of land. Alto Chequichinonha is the largest eucalyptus cultivation area in the world. The company Aperam Bioenergia, privatized in 2006, is the market leader. Aperam is not as secretive as the mining company Vale. On the contrary, manager Benone Males proudly explains why his company is making an important contribution to climate protection. After all, he says, smelting iron with energy from charcoal is far more climate-friendly than smelting with fossil energy from hard coal. Burnt eucalyptus trees grow back, so in his view, Brazil's iron industry rightly earns money from CO2 emission certificates. Benoni Males also shows the reporter Aperam's house-high charcoal piles, into which the gripper arms of a huge caterpillar machine push 30 or 40 logs at a time. The manager explains that the company also has filters for soot and fine dust, in stark contrast to thousands of small-scale charcoal piles in the country. But what about the huge water consumption in eucalyptus cultivation?
Eucalyptus crops has a water use similar to any other crops that are commonly used for everybody, like beans, cotton, soy, and etc. We have technical studies that show quite the opposite, that the presence of eucalyptus and the biomass blanket that it forms on the soil helps to hold evapotranspiration and even to secure more water in the soil. What we see in water topic is that the growth in the population, even the changes in rainy behavior because of climate change and everything, it's really shifting the way that water behaves in the regions. So it is a much complex issue, and there are a lot of factors that affect this that have to be considered. What Aperam has been doing in the past years is to deploy several actions and try to reduce the water consumption as much as it can, like for instance, planting only during the rainy season, avoiding this way to grab water in rivers, reservoirs, dams, and etc., as a way to have a more sustainable operation when it comes to the water topic.
Claims the Aperam manager. However, it is scientifically proven that an average of 6 liters of water per day and square meter evaporate on areas planted with eucalyptus. On natural wet savanna, it is only 2 litres. And it has also been proven that 40% less rainwater reaches the groundwater table on eucalyptus plantations. Since the early 1990s, the effects of the gradual draining of the Chapada area have become increasingly apparent. For example, in the town of Turmalina. The town's prefect, Arlene Francisco da Silva, explains.
Until 1996, Turmalina drew its water from the Chapadas. Numerous springs supplied the town. Over time, however, the springs dried up and the city council decided to transfer Turmalina's water supply to Copasa, a state-owned company operating throughout Minas Gerais. Copasa then built a canal in which water from the Rio Araçuaí is pumped up to the city.
All this costs a lot of money, and unlike in the past, Turmalina citizens now pay water and sewage charges. But the highest costs are borne by the farming families who live on the slopes of the Chapadas. Farmers like Sales Cudero Maciel in the village of Gentil, which lies in the middle of fertile fields. A chicken is cooking on the stove. It will have to be enough to feed the family of six.
In the past, when we still had enough water, we could live well here. We harvested everything we needed to eat from the fields, and we could sell the rest. But today we hardly earn anything because we don't have enough water. We have no money, and we can barely feed our children. All the water from the springs and streams is gone. Now we only have the rainwater that falls from the sky, and we try to collect a bit of it. We also get some water from a neighbor. She can still draw water from a spring, but we don't know how long this spring will continue to flow.
The family now has to get by without the cattle and pigs they used to keep. Lack of water also means lack of pasture for the animals. Many a poor farming family is now struggling to survive on a daily basis, says farmer Faustina Lopez da Silva.
Because some families would otherwise have no income at all, they go up to the Chapada to collect waste wood from the eucalyptus plantations. They then turn it into charcoal. It's backbreaking work, but you have to survive somehow.
However, surviving on eucalyptus waste wood is illegal in Minas Gerais. The owners of the plantations have categorically forbidden any removal of wood.
We have a 70-year-old woman in the village who was caught collecting waste wood and had to pay a heavy fine. In some neighboring villages, people have even been arrested for this.
At CAV, we speak to an elderly farmer who prefers not to give his name. In 2016, children from his village of Itamarangiba found a huge landfill of soil mixed with old pesticides above the settlement. Hundreds of truckloads of it, the farmer tells us, and hands us a document. Dated the 19th of January 2017, a laboratory in Belo Horizonte certified that the soil sample submitted for analysis contained 1.6 grams of the pesticide aldrin per kilogram of soil. Aldrin is a carcinogenic pesticide that has long been banned worldwide. The authorities, who were immediately alerted, have still not taken any action, reports the farmer, as well as CAV director Renato Alves de Sousa. If nothing is done soon, the courts will have to be called in. However, in Brazil, these are known for particularly lengthy proceedings. Aperam manager Benoni Males says he knows nothing about a pesticide dump at his company. And of course, something like that would not be good, especially as his company does not want any conflicts with the farmers. On the contrary, says Males, and shows us a 5-hectare plot of land where eucalyptus was last harvested 6 months ago.
Here is an area that is just prepared because we are entering the rainy season. This is a land that is owned by the company, but through the family farming program, this land is made available for communities around us to plant whatever they want.
A pilot project that Aperam is now offering to a number of villages, including that of Faustina Lopez da Silva.
Yes, the company has offered to help us. They told us we could plant beans under their trees, and they would even fertilize the soil for us. But the contract with the company contained very strange clauses. If we didn't grow our beans according to their rules for 10 years, we would have to pay heavy penalties. We don't agree to that. They're just making us dependent on them.
She wants nothing but her water back.
Many from our village have left for the city because they can no longer survive here. They can't grow anything for lack of water, and the cows no longer give milk. But some of us stay anyway. We persevere. We won't let the company drive us away.
Faustina Lopez da Silva will need a lot of stamina in her battle with the eucalyptus industry, just like Maria Teresa Coruccio and Elida Geralda in their dispute with the mining company Vale. The global demand for iron is increasing, and at the same time, pressure is mounting on the industry to produce in the most climate-friendly way possible. Vale and Aperam are trying to do this. However, many environmental concerns and those of local people are falling by the wayside.
Neil King there with a report by Tony Neumann. That's all from us for this week. For more Living Planet content, go check out dw.com/livingplanet or find us wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube, DW Podcasts. This episode was edited by Neil King. The studio technician was Jan Winkelmann. I'm Sarah Steffen. Bye for now.